We're all in uncharted territory looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Good Wednesday, everybody. Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio and ESPN 2, Sirius XM Channel 80, and your smart speakers everywhere. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you. In a day that seems like we're sort of getting back to the idea of things that might be coming back and might be coming back in bunches, right?
You know what came back?
Yeah.
My barber.
Yeah, you look good.
Woo!
I'm not going to lie to you. I walked in and said, you're a good-looking man.
Got to sit in the barber chair yesterday. Now, it wasn't my barber. You know, over time, unfortunately, he's not back. So I had to sit with someone new.
So you're coming off a hiatus of being able to get your hair cut, and it had turned you into a full-blown headband guy.
Oh,
you were like a different person.
I'm going to keep wearing the headband.
You look like Matthew McConaughey's dad for a while.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie to you.
But so dad or brother?
Sure.
Okay.
You come off that hiatus, and you had to immediately break in a new barber.
I did. It was kind of interesting. I've gone to the same guy for probably 10 years, and all of a sudden I'm back, and I'm there, and like he's not there, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, that's a lot of trust.
What? Yeah, it is. Yeah. What do I do? And I'm like,
I
walk in and get a haircut is what I do.
I'm actually going today and I'm very excited.
Yes.
I'm very excited.
Yeah. A simple thing.
Well, I can say it's different because you're obviously not like me going in to get a buzz cut when I was getting my haircut. So it's a little more involved and the relationship is tested early.
So hair care is back
in
our
back.
Fine state.
Yeah.
And we're getting closer and closer to the idea of how the NBA is going to come back. Again, our Woj, Ramona Shelburne, Dave McMenamin, all reporting over the last day or so that we're getting closer to honing in on what the plan is going to be. These 22 teams, it'll be the 16 playoff teams that are currently seeded 1 through 16 now, although it won't be seeded that way.
It'll be
8 and 8, East-West, plus another 6 teams, and they'll try and figure out the schedule to get them playing in. It looks like it's all going to be in the bubble or the incubator or the campus, which is the word.
Let's go campus.
Let's go campus, because that
Wide
had a better
sports campus, at Disney World.
Down in Disney World. And so they're closer and closer to figuring that out. And Woj on SportsCenter yesterday said the scheduling doing it this way means that the NBA believes if they pull this plan off in any way, shape, or form, there will not be necessary for anyone to look at this season with an asterisk.
That's going to be part, I think, of the test for teams to win a championship. And, you know, we talk about whether there's an asterisk on this season. Is this championship going to be treated differently? And while there's not going to be travel and it's not going to have, you know, the playoffs aren't going to have that grueling nature, but there, I think, will be a different test of the mettle of the players, of getting back into condition, of what teams, you know, get back the chemistry and what they had that had them among the elite. But how about this? How about the teams who stay healthy, not just physically on the floor, but stay free of the coronavirus?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think one thing generally I'm going to say, you know, the NBA coming back and baseball coming back and MLS doing the smart thing. It looks like they're going to get a deal.
So thank God.
Nobody gets locked out there. And
hug Taylor Twellman.
You know, the NHL first that came back with their format. And the one thing I'm not going to do is, because I know it's been done, is criticize the format coming back. My thought process is, man, this is just the year, right? This is just however it's going to go. Just kind of play it out. If people want to look at it differently, you go ahead. If you want to look at it as a legitimate championship, you go ahead. This is just a different year. They're trying to put together, obviously, in the pros, they have to work it out with the players and the league and all that. I get, but I'm one of those. I'm not going to criticize any format any sport comes back in for this year, because this is such a throw it away year.
Yeah, no, criticizing format would be, I mean, almost cruel given the circumstances. Like, these leagues are working with whatever they can to try and just get sports back right now. And I think as we've talked through this a bunch of times, what I kind of fall to is you're going to treat it historically like a strike-shortened season, which means you're going to mention it every time we talk about this championship. It doesn't delegitimize that they're still going to put the Larry O'Brien or the Stanley Cup up in whatever building ultimately ends up winning this thing, but we're all going to look at it and go, well, yeah, if Major League Baseball ends up playing 70 games as opposed to, you know, their usual bout of games, if the NBA deals with a multiple-month hiatus in the middle, that's the biggest difference to me, right, is this isn't a strike-shortened season where it was we played a lesser amount of games, but we did it all at once. You just took a break in the middle of everything. Right. It is essentially two different seasons right now.
Right. The baseball thing is fascinating on a lot of levels. We'll get to that a little bit later. I mean, records. What if someone hits 400 during a 60-game season? I mean, that's a fascinating discussion we can have
a little bit later.
If and when it happens. If they can, you know, have not biblical losses, which we'll get to a little bit later. But the real, one of the interesting things about the NBA plan is it's proposed that the latest they could go, Game 7 of the NBA Finals, would be October 12th.
So starting July 31st and going to October 12th.
Which is a Monday.
October 12th is a Monday, and it's October, so that's during the NFL season.
Yeah.
And if the NFL is going on, there is Monday Night Football. Who's playing?
It's the Saints and the Chargers.
It's Drew Brees. It's in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Drew Brees against the team that drafted him.
Right.
In New Orleans, Monday Night Football, and you can't accuse us of network bias because one will be on ESPN.
We're good either way.
And the other's going to be on ABC. So, I mean, there's a few ancillary things to kind of goof around with. Listen, we understand it's still very serious out there and what's going on. And believe me, in about 25 minutes, we're going to get to some comments made by an NFL coach that, I mean, are you kidding me of how ridiculous it sounds? With everything going on. But there is that Monday Night Football. So if Game 7, it would be October 12th, it would be up against a Monday Night Football game. So it's the old question, which would you watch? But the interesting thing in the NBA is because it's all going on in Orlando, nobody has any home court advantage, and you have a 1 seed and an 8 seed once you break it into conferences. So what's the advantage? Normally, it's your home court advantage.
Yeah.
Well, there's no home court advantage. Some of the things they're talking about to give the higher seeds an advantage, one of them is bringing in their actual hardwood floor from their arena.
Yeah.
So they would have the feel of their arena floor. Another is, and I know you have a bunch as well, Trey, another is getting the higher seed gets their choice of Disney Resort. That they stay in. I kid you not. Yeah. This is some of the things they're talking about. And there's more.
Those are sort of like, you know, creature comforts.
Yeah.
They're actually talking about changing the game on the floor. For example, the higher seed being awarded. These are all being discussed. Right, it's been finalized yet. The higher seed being awarded the first possession of the second, third, and fourth quarter. The higher seed being allowed to designate one player to be whistled for 7 fouls. Like a guy go out there. Just bloody somebody, you know what I mean? Hack-a-Shack guy, basically, is going to be on there. The higher seed being able to receive an extra coach's challenge. I mean, these are literal things that they're talking about doing to give the team that had the higher record during the regular season and the better seeding somewhat of a competitive advantage. Now, as guys who played on a pretty high level, both of you, are you okay with those kind of things? Because one is creature comforts, right? Those are
make things
easier for the team that's better. This is legitimately changing the competition on the field of play.
I'm good if I'm one of the good teams.
Well, that's exactly right.
Where am I in this? Like, listen, we're at 9:30 this morning. We're getting ready to talk to Bucks head coach Mike Budenholzer, who will be one of the teams that potentially benefits from these things. So what would he be looking for?
Spotted cow down from Wisconsin.
I know what he'd be looking for. Giannis signs a Supermax.
Yeah, exactly.
He has to sign the Supermax deal and stay with us. But seriously, I mean, I don't know, Trey. That's a really good question because there's part of me that says, just play the game.
Right.
And there's another part of me that says, all right, you're the 1 seed for a reason. You should get something more than the lower seeds. But then I also go to, well, this is kind of an odd year, so we just play it out. So let's do what we should do. Let's let you do the work.
Throw it out to the masses.
Okay? At Golic and Wiggle. They are taking, you know, some options here. What would you give the higher seeds? What kind of, whether off-court or on-court advantage, should they get, you know, with this system going on? Because it is amazing some of the things they're talking about.
The lower seed has to play in pants.
I mean, yeah.
The higher seed can wear shorts. The lower seed has to play in their warm-ups.
All And you would have to pick it out, Mike. All first edition sneakers of some sneakers made years ago.
I was going to say, some team has to play in all brand new sneakers. Yeah. The other gets to have theirs broken in.
No. 8 seed plays barefoot.
Right? I mean,
the list of things are fascinating.
For 20 seconds, you can exercise the green mushroom clause, which gives you one extra player for just 30 seconds of on-court
time. Like Mario Kart?
Yeah.
But they truly are talking about something. So Mike Budenholzer, this is going to be great because he's going to be a 1 seed.
Right.
He is going to be a 1 seed, so I really want to know from if you could pick one thing, on-court thing, that you would like the advantage
on
to.
On or off-court. You could, whatever you want. What advantage do you want
spotted
as a 1-4 seed?
Spotted cow. Bring that spotted cow down to Florida,
exactly,
baby. That's what we're talking about. So that's on Twitter. Let us know, because I love that they're thinking about this.
I love that they're thinking about
this. I'm not sure if I'm a competitor how I'd feel about it, but I love that the NBA is actually going through the process.
How about
here?
You're
going
to send an advanced guy down to start looking at resorts too, which is the best resort.
What a good job. Hey, check out the best hotel.
That's awesome.
Best meals, best restaurants, best everything.
That is just awesome.
That is absolutely cool. We want to hear from you on that. But coming up, as college sports returns, some teams are dealing with what some call a nightmare scenario, and we'll get into that.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
We need to have the opportunity for our medical experts to continue to collect data, see how our human behavior responds in the reopening environment across the country.
You can definitely test both teams. You can test the officials and everybody. Can you test 100,000 fans coming into a stadium? Probably not.
Any football is better than no football.
We need to allow time, which in my view, they take all of June.
All right, Golden Wingo here with you on a Wednesday morning. So, thankfully, there wasn't a really massive outcry and violence and looting across most of the nation last night. There were some cities that had some bad things. Boston,
certainly,
was not good, but it wasn't on the scale that we've seen over the last couple of days. But obviously, you know, one of the things that Junior, you and I have talked about sort of off the air when all this is going on and all these rallies and protests and there's been looting and rioting and people screaming and yelling at each other, there are a lot of people in close proximity next to each other. And obviously that's the thing that everyone's been trying to avoid during the middle of this pandemic. And we've seen some college players be parts of some of these protests, and now some of them have been testing positive for COVID-19. And that's been the sort of the issue we've talked about with college football all along. What are they actually going to do about testing? Well, Eamon Ogbamiga, who was the Oklahoma State defensive MVP last year, attended a rally in Tulsa, and when he came back for workouts on campus, he actually tested positive for COVID-19, and he's not the only one of the college players that tested positive.
He was a defensive MVP last year for Oklahoma State, so he tested positive when he came in for workouts. Two Marshall players and a staffer also tested positive. They have come in for voluntary workouts. They come in and there's a 7-day kind of isolation period and they go through tests and they were asymptomatic, but that was found out. So they're obviously separated from everybody else. Before they were not with other players yet at that point. They were in the isolated time for that. You know, Louisville's getting ready to come back to campus, but this is one thing we were wondering about is, We kept hearing, well, if players test positive, they'll be isolated like, you know, other sicknesses, but they'll be isolated. So it's just a matter of the exposure that they're going to have. And in this case in Marshall, they're saying they didn't have the two players and a staffer had not had yet exposure to some of the other players. And they're kind of coming in groups at this point. So This is, we knew it was going to happen. All these players aren't going to come back. All these student athletes aren't going to come back. And it's not just going to be football. Remember, in July, we had Dawn Staley on. In July, the men and women's basketball teams are going to be starting to come back to schools as well. You know you're going to get positive tests. So how much testing is going to go on? And then isolation. And when they bring them back in, and again, these were asymptomatic. So it's starting right out of the gate where these processes and 65-page, outlines and guidelines are being tested right out of the gate.
And, being monitored by local health officials. So you're, talking about resources with whatever the local hospital is in a lot of these areas. It's just interesting because it included staffers too in the Marshall case, right? Like we thought about this. Well, you have college kids coming back, and now let's make it clear what happened with Ogbong Bamiga and him going out to protest is going to be an outlier here. When we talked about college kids going off and being college kids, we didn't mean their right taking part in a peaceful protest, which is certainly something that is entirely separate. But we talked about in generalities for college athletes coming back, basically what Dawn Staley mentioned to us. They're going to be athletes that feel invincible. They're going to hang out with each other. They're going to do all these things. Well, the staffer is now just as much at risk as we talked about in bringing this in. And how do you approach it? Because this is the interesting part to me in reading, Louisville's approach to coming back to this.
They came back yesterday, right?
They came back yesterday, and a lot of these schools, so like Oklahoma State is a group of 30 that came back to help them get prepared for June 15th is the start date for when they can begin voluntary workouts back on campus there. And for a lot of these schools, it's that phased idea. Louisville falls into this where it's 30 members of the team that come back, a few members from other sports teams, and then a few weeks later, you'll get another group that'll come in. And a few weeks later, you'll get another group, so they can kind of do this spaced out. And they're talking about the way all the workout equipment's going to be spaced out right now, that they're basically going to do these things in clusters. They're going to test at Louisville on the first day that they get back, and then again on the eighth day, because there's been some research that indicates that that's a useful way to go about this. On and on down the list, the interesting part to me was, you've done all this planning, like you said, to get up to this point, and then you heard from Scott Satterfield, Louisville's head football coach, who said, yeah, at some point we're going to like have to get back on the field. And and it sounds like that hasn't really been broached in a meaningful way yet. And so we're doing so much work to get back for this part. And we remember, especially as we've talked about, the sport of football is such a different animal because playing it is so different in how you prepare for it. Like, eventually that's going to be the part that has to get figured out. And it sounds like it's going to be largely done as we're still trying to monitor and figure out the rest of this.
Well, the interesting thing here is that they're testing, right? And we had talked to so many athletic directors, who said, we'll do temperature screening and all that kind of stuff. Isn't this living proof that you're going to have to test?
Well, I think
you're going to have to test.
I think a lot of them were going to test in the beginning. Like for Louisville, starting yesterday, players were driving in again in groups and they'd get tested in their car. Kind of like you're seeing around the country. You have the drive up places. They're driving in and getting tested, and they're going to end up doing 120 between athletes and staff, to get ready for June 8th when they start the voluntary workouts. But Mike, you're right at the end of this. And then to your point, Trey, how much do you keep testing? You test again on June 8th. Do you test again when they start hitting? Because you can have all the protocols you want of the distance of working out in clusters. And as Dawn Staley, we'll have players traveling in packs of four. Well, at some point you got to play your sport. Yeah. And that means 22 players out on a field hitting one another with no social distancing. So at some point that has to come into play.
As Herm said once, you can't be a good football player and practice social distance. It's not possible.
It's just interesting how that's going to go about, because they've had all this time behind closed doors to plan for just the workouts coming back.
Just and this
now,
part.
This part is going to have to be done while you're trying to monitor all your student athletes on campus and then get ready for the season that I'm sure they've talked about, and I'm sure I'm probably underselling how much they've delved into it at this point. But again, to just hear the idea and to hear a coach talk about it like that is pretty interesting.
So that's the situation in college football that they're dealing with now. We'll see how they move through that going forward. But coming up next, it was just 2 weeks ago that the NFL admitted at the highest level, we have a problem in hiring and promoting minority coaches and front office people. And then an NFL head coach said almost the exact opposite thing. We'll get to that after this.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Boy, ain't that the truth. Golic and Wingo here with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN2, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here, also on Sirius XM Channel 80 and your smart speakers. So I want to read you guys something that is literally 2 weeks old, 2 weeks ago. This is the situation the NFL found themselves in trying to address and adapt the Rooney Rule.
Right.
Basically trying to incentivize the thought process was to incentivize teams to hire more minorities in positions of power, whether it would be a head coach, a coordinator position, or as a general manager. Troy Vincent, executive vice president of the NFL, quote, "The facts are we have a broken system, and we are looking to implement things to change direction of where we're going. And it's been south, not a gradual south, but a direct south. So the fight continues there." And the point he's making is just a few years ago, there were 8 minority head coaches in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Now there are only 4. So just 2 weeks ago, the NFL as an entity, as a business, realized we're not doing a good enough job in promoting and hiring minority in positions of power. So keep that in a backdrop for context for what you're about to hear. This is Vic Fangio, Denver Broncos head coach, in a Broncos presser on a Zoom call, sort of addressing everything that's been going on in this country and the outrage over the killing of George Floyd by a Minneapolis police officer. And we've seen what that has sparked, not only in this country, but across the world, some of the demonstrations. Here's what Vic Fangio had to say about racism in the NFL.
I think our problems in the NFL along those lines are minimal. We're a league of meritocracy. You earn what you get. You get what you earn. I don't see racism at all in the NFL. I don't see discrimination in the NFL. You know, we live in a great atmosphere. Like I alluded to earlier, we're lucky. We all live together, joined as one for one common goal, and we all intermingle and mix tremendously. You know, if the society reflected an NFL team, we'd all be great.
So there's a lot to unpack there, and it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Look, I think I understand the point that Vic was trying to make, but I don't see how you can say there is no issue with minorities in the NFL 2 weeks after the league has admitted we have a problem.
See, and I guess it's where you look at it, because if you look at it, and it was somebody did tweet it to me and said, I know you're going to talk about Vic Fangio, but also look at what Pat Mahomes said. And Pat Mahomes directed it more at Patrick Mahomes. Remember, his dad played in Major League Baseball.
Yes.
Pat said, I grew up in a locker room. And he went on in a long statement, but he basically said, I wish the country could learn from the injustices that we have witnessed and become more like a locker room where everyone is accepted. He talked about a locker room. And, Mike, we've been in locker rooms, and we have, you know, there are everything from race, creed, color, everything in there that, and I do think, and you know, I've talked about Bill Curry sure. in the huddle of how you do get that brotherhood, in the locker room. So if you're talking about the locker room, I could see it one way, but you know, and I guess maybe I would need to hear the context of the question asked to Vic Fangio. Was it about players? But I hear him say the NFL. And my God, the NFL couldn't be more behind. I mean, you just mentioned from 8 minority head coaches to 4, there's 2 offensive coordinators that are African-American, 2 front office
right.
As well. I mean, and oh, by the way, now, and this was before Pat Mahomes got in the league, you had a player do a peaceful protest, you know, and was blackballed by the owners.
Yes.
By the owners.
Not the league, by the owners.
Not the other players.
Yes.
But by the owners. So The locker room is, I think, one group, but then there is the NFL of what we're seeing. And remember, owners hire head coaches, or they put GMs in position, of which there's only a couple of color, to hire head coaches. So I'm sorry, Vic, to say, if you're talking about the whole NFL, that there is not an issue. I would disagree. There is an issue that even the league,
yes,
admitted that there was this issue.
You're 100% right on this, because we've had this conversation. Herm talked about it yesterday, the locker room, where you can hash out, you can have all kinds of uncomfortable conversations and you find a way to get along. That's one part of it. And I think that's what Vic is addressing. But to your point, and Junior, we know this, that you can't just blanket that and say the NFL doesn't have a problem.
So, and again, even more so, and Bomani Jones brought this up, if you look at Vic Fangio's path to where he got now, to how long he had to wait for a head job, all these different things, you can look at it kind of like we talked about with Dabo the other day and say, well, based on, we were to just go the myopic route of saying, based on just the way that this guy has gone about things, you could concoct a way in your mind where you go, well, yeah, of course he believes that. He believes he has lived out that idea of a meritocracy in that form. But obviously, this is not a sample size of just Vic Fangio's experience, and that is not how we judge, as you put it, guys put it, the NFL, the NFL, the NFL, and that was what was referenced in this. The LA Times, we're getting ready to talk, an article about Anthony Lynn, who talked to LZ Granderson that was in the LA Times, and one of the quotes from Anthony Lynn was, I know when you look at 32 quarterbacks in the National Football League, Colin Kaepernick could have been one of the 32. If not, he could have at least been a quality backup. For me, being an African-American head coach, this is tough when asked about Colin not being involved in the league, as you mentioned. So this statement comes on the same day that we saw in a paper another coach in this league, an African-American coach in this league, say, yeah, of course Colin should be in this league. Of course, if this were a true meritocracy, he would be playing football. And that's the thing, is we can all sit here and laud the admirable qualities and these ideals that we love about sports. They're not all ever 100% true. Like,
correct.
No, the NFL, even with greatness, isn't a perfect meritocracy. No, sports is. There's politics that goes on in all of this. And especially at this level, we've seen the disproportionate effects that, you know, the process has on minorities and their abilities to get hired.
Yeah, and some of the quotes from Anthony Lynn to LZ Granderson in this article in the LA Times. He said, I've read some good statements, but I'm pretty pissed off right now, but I want to do something. I just want to put out a statement because it's the right thing to do. I want change. So I guess it starts with having the conversation, talking things out. In 1992, I remember watching L.A. burn after the videotape of Rodney King's beating by L.A. police is what he's referring to there. And here we are in 2020, and I'm watching it again, and it just hits me, nothing has changed. And that's sort of the context that Anthony Lynn is talking about.
And I think with this, like, Vic Fangio, I don't want to do too much excusing for his statement. He said what he said. We're all in charge of picking our words carefully, and so he has to deal with the repercussions that come with that. During a 16-minute session, he also said that he's encouraged his players to protest. There are other things that were a part of this, and there are other things that need to be talked about in this. But there's also what Vic and what Patrick Mahomes referenced there, this idea that in a football locker room, all of the, you can have conversations that are different. There is a little more. We have all learned. I mean, I talked with Dan Orlovsky about this the other day. Someone who came from a pretty homogenous area like I did here in, you know, Avon bleeping Connecticut, and didn't encounter a lot of black people, a lot of people of color during my, you know, the younger period of my life. Once I started playing in sports in high school and at the college level and beyond, you're exposed to a lot more. You meet a lot of people from different backgrounds and you learn a lot of stuff. So there's a ton of value in that. But to say that there's no, you know, it's a league of meritocracy, that he doesn't see discrimination in the league, there's maybe a difference of opportunity within it, and still players experiencing discrimination in their lives.
Correct. Right.
Players who were a part of the league experience discrimination. And so I'm sure there's a lot of the recoil in that, of, in addition to the hiring practices for coaches, for people in positions of power, there's also probably players that are saying, yeah, I might not be not given a job on the field because you can't deny my ability, but I'm still treated at times very differently in my life, and that's still something that falls under the umbrella.
Well, we've always heard so many athletes say, yeah, when I'm here, I'm treated as equal, but when I leave, I'm just another black man in a car.
So that's the thing. Nobody knows that I'm this football player or this professional athlete. And let's also understand that no place is perfect either.
Correct.
You know, in the locker room, there can be divide in a locker room as well. There were a lot based on race.
There were a lot of uncomfortable conversations surrounding Colin Kaepernick's protest that occurred in the locker room for that reason.
By the way, the question Vic was asked about that, he was asked about player activism in the NFL was
he definitely encourages, you know, the protests and stuff. I said, we're taking one of the statements. It was a longer interview, and there are some things he said in there that certainly merit being talked about as well. That they're really, most coaches out there have said they've been, Jim Harbaugh, you know, at Michigan,
in Ann Arbor,
walked, you know, with some of his players as well. So, but there are parts of it that struck me with Vic. Vic has been around this league. He first got into coaching in the NFL in 1986. So 34 years he's been around and seen a whole lot. And this is back to in the day there, because that's right around the time when I got in, where you weren't, you know, a black quarterback. Black quarterback, what do you mean? Right. You know, I played with Warren Moon, who ended up going to Canada first, because black quarterback in the NFL, come on. I mean, we know where that has gone, and that was years ago, and we're worked up to where we are now. But he's seen a lot in the NFL. That's why I was a little surprised from that side of it to hear from him, for a guy that's been around the league and has seen some of the positive changes, and there have been bad ones as well, but no some question. Of the positive changes going forward. But still, you can't say there isn't some issue overall in the NFL with that.
There is a huge difference, you're right, in saying that the locker room is this great place that we can learn from, people can come together.
Which is true.
In lauding that and saying, I don't see racism or discrimination in the NFL.
Yeah.
That's a pretty broad statement, even with, and I understand you can go on and explain all these number of things, and he addressed, you know, the George Floyd case individually, and he said those officers should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law, all those things. But we know, and Vic knows, he's been around this long enough to know that what you say can end up in a headline, that what you say and your words all have to be important and all have to be chosen well. And so to say, I don't see racism or discrimination in the NFL, that's going to be just a hard no as soon as it comes out of your mouth.
Literally, the NFL said the exact opposite 2 weeks ago. We have a problem. We need to fix it. So that's one part. But I want to get back to Anthony Lynn, because I thought the article that LZ did with him was absolutely phenomenal. And here was LZ talking about the article and the interview he did with Anthony on NFL Live yesterday, basically saying he was surprised at how candid and transparent Anthony was when the two got together.
I didn't know how open and transparent he was going to be. When you're an African-American head coach in the NFL, you know, you're juggling a lot of balls, some that a lot of fans don't even witness. And so I was concerned that it wasn't going to be an in-depth conversation, but I was shocked to see his candor, to be quite honest with you. He was very forthcoming about his own experiences, about Colin Kaepernick, about how the NFL handled it, and more importantly, about what he thinks needs to happen next in terms of social justice reform. So it was a wide-ranging conversation. It lasted a couple of hours.
Yeah, it was a great conversation. He was very open in the conversation, and basically saying, when he talked about, I just don't want some comment out there, you know, because that's where we are now. Put a statement out. Why didn't you put a statement out? What did you say in your statement? Yeah. Let's pick up. What do you mean you didn't put a statement out? You didn't put a statement out. Now you put a statement out. Knicks. So everybody is kind of gauging everybody's statement. And as you've mentioned, Mike, it's the easiest thing in the world to do is put out a statement condemning what you saw. And then Anthony Lynn is like, okay, now what? You know, let's go somewhere, because part of the interview, he said, you know, I remember in 1992 watching LA burn. And here we are in 2020, and I'm watching it again, so nothing has changed. I mean, I guess, you know, that's his point. And he even said, I need to go out and do more. I need to get involved more to help change more. He was very candid in this article.
And I think that's the thing that we can all take away, is introspection is the goal right now, and figuring out what more you can do. Like, keep in mind, Anthony Lynn saying he's the guy that can do more. Anthony Lynn, who is the guy who went to Africa and built a school over there for members of the Maasai tribe, like a kindergarten through third grade school, I believe, over in Africa to help people over there. Like a guy who is incredibly giving. And he talked about being a part of the Chargers organization that he says works a lot in that area to help do things better. And he still looked at his situation and said, there's more I need to be doing to be creating a better life for my kids, for the next generation, for everybody involved in this. And so I think that's kind of a reminder to us all. And that's what leadership is supposed to be, right? A signal that, all right, if the best among us are willing to do something, why not me?
Right.
If he doesn't have an excuse, someone who's already going above and beyond in so many ways, why do I have an excuse in all this? And that's kind of the question everyone has to ask themselves.
And all of that is Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. So something we've talked about the last couple of days, everybody releasing a statement. Are you releasing a statement? What are you saying in your statement? Why haven't you released a statement? One of those teams that had not released a statement about what had gone on across the country was, of course, the New York Knicks. And it was an internal memo that ESPN obtained, but basically saying, hey, you know, We're not talking about this. Our opinion is no greater than anybody else's.
We are not qualified, more qualified to speak on this than anyone else.
And so, some employees were ticked.
Yeah.
And had a meeting with Dolan about it.
As you might imagine, things changed pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Less than 24 hours after sending that email to employees stating the company was, quote, not more qualified than anyone else to offer our opinion on social matters, Knicks owner James Dolan emphasized his stance denouncing racism against anyone. I will continue to do as much as I can to help make our community even better. I know you will also. So amazingly, suddenly, he felt qualified to have an opinion.
And Dan, it was actually like, it was the equivalent, and I heard Pablo Torre, who we might hear from in a second, describe this. It was essentially a players only meeting.
With staff members, but not with Dolan.
It was not with Dolan.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was a meeting held about Dolan and about what, why is our company not speaking on this, but it was essentially a meeting with the employees and some of the staffers who were upset without Dolan. And,
so is it like too late to put out a statement? I mean, once you say we're not going to put out a statement and then you put out a statement because basically you've been shamed into putting out a statement.
Yeah. Wow. Listen, you mentioned it. Here's Pablo on Spain and Company yesterday talking about whatever it is Dolan just said.
It didn't really do much. You know, the name George Floyd still not mentioned. Black people really specifically not mentioned. Certainly a lot of clarity about we are against racism, but to me, this was a response to the public response, to his lack of public response, and it didn't really do much, especially because this still is not a public response. And instead, it seems to be a strategically leaked second letter that tries to clean up some of the stuff without really addressing any of the substance of the anger in response to the first attempt.
And what's the underlying theme here? It's James Dolan, so he'll screw it up.
Yeah.
Right? As far as Knicks fans are concerned.
I don't know if it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, but man, he has delivered on that front.
Yeah.
And you know what? I've seen over the last couple of days everyone talking about, we brought it up, that James Dolan deserves credit for hiring a number of, you know, black
staffers. Absolutely does. Yes.
And giving opportunity and providing jobs. And again, those things are all true, but it's interesting once we heard, and Pablo brought it up, about it being staffers in Madison Square Garden who were upset about this, who were looking at the situation saying, what are we going to say? Or NBA players looking at this and being upset about it. The part of this that we forget, because we all look at it as we're just grading papers, we're looking out here, what's your statement, what's that, is part of this is about leadership. And you have people that you are leading who are vulnerable members of the population in many of these different ways who are looking up all of a sudden and going, all right, wait a minute. What are we standing for? Like, this isn't just abstracts we're talking about anymore. This is a group of people that were looking up at the leadership in there and saying, well, what are we stand for? Because we work here too, and we've got to answer to an outside world about the place that employs us.
Well, not only that, but the Knicks are trying to recruit people, right? They've been trying to recruit people to get there and come and sign that big free agent for a long time. You better understand the people you're trying to recruit.
Yeah.
And by doing things like this, it's not helping. I want you to listen to Malik Andrews, our NBA reporter. This was before his clarification of his non-clarification and a non-statement that wasn't a statement. It was before all of that. But basically saying, NBA players are watching.
There's been a lot of frustration and disappointment, and I'm going to start with within the Knicks organization. You know, there's a lot of people who felt like this was an opportunity where sports teams have been making statements about what is going on in the world as a profession that is built on majority black men. And the Knicks were one of two teams as of last night that hadn't made a statement. The other was the Spurs, but Greg Popovich gave a very in-depth interview. But it's not just the Knicks that are frustrated. frustrated with this sentiment. I've heard from presidents, from GMs, from players of other teams also getting in contact with me saying, what's going on over there? That doesn't seem right, and that doesn't sit well with us, especially in light of the fact, Sage, that Dennis Smith Jr., a player for the Knicks, was out protesting in the streets with other people about the death of George Floyd. And so this really is upsetting a lot of people around the NBA.
It's not surprising that it's the Knicks, but I mean, my God, you're trying, the players you are trying to recruit are looking at you and saying, why would I want to go work for you? I mean,
on a day when we saw Ben and Jerry's and Tom Herman out there swinging the hammer to look at this and to look at how, I mean, really what complete lack of teeth a statement like this had, the sort of listlessness of the whole process. You're right, especially for a league that is predominantly black, and sports are looked to lead in ways that are sometimes unfair and sometimes, you know, we say it not maybe the way to go, but they're looked to lead, and it was a massive failure.
As is always the case, I'll take a pint of Ben and Jerry's over a Knicks ticket. Coming up, another sports owner in a big market getting criticized for a much different remark. We'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo.